This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omisid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omisid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omised.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, good morning to you. Glad you're with us here. It's the Mark Cox Morning Show on a Wednesday. We have got lots of stuff to get to as we plan our Todd Pyro night in St. Louis here. It's funny, if you missed our interview with him in the last hour, you can go pick that up. Just hit the rewind button on the Odyssey app. He was giving us some grief for having Kilmeade in town and not having a Todd Pyro night in town yet. So we'll see what happens.
Maybe it's sounding someday. More and more likely like it actually could happen where Todd comes to town.
Oh, Todd, yeah, maybe we'll get Todd and Carly. How about that?
I feel like Todd could just do a stand-up. He could just stand on the stage and just say random things and probably entertain people.
He is a funny guy. There's no doubt about that. But we shall see. Coming up a little later this hour, we're going to talk to James Robbins. He's the Dean of Academics at the Institute of World Politics. Probably more importantly than that, he used to work in the Office of the Secretary of Defense. He was a former special assistant in there. And we're going to talk to him about this whole dust-up yesterday about the Signal app and how it was used and if it was misused. I mean, it had been approved for use. That's kind of the bottom line here. How did the journalist's name get attached to it? I have no idea. They're investigating it. I think they're going to find out sooner rather than later. I don't think it was a coincidence that it broke the day or two before. They already had a scheduled hearing with the director of the CIA, the director of national intelligence, all these people right in front of all of the Senate. I don't believe that for a minute. We'll play a little bit of that sound for you here coming up in a minute, because when you hear, you know, the line of questioning and the anger and the vitriol yesterday from the Democrats in that hearing, it was pretty amazing. Also, the other big story we haven't talked about this morning is that executive order the president signed yesterday on elections and voting and proving that you are an U.S. citizen before when you register to vote. Like it puts the impetus back on the secretaries of state, and it adds to the form that you have to provide some proof of your citizenship.
Why is that controversial?
Why is this just now
happening under President Trump? Why was this not a thing forever ago?
In every state that Kamala Harris won in the last election, there's no voter ID required at all, oddly. And in most of the states where she lost, there's some form of voter ID required. So, or at least you have to prove who you are, bring some proof of who you are to the polls.
Well, Mark, the illegal gang members really should have a say in what goes on. So I think at least those people should be able to vote. Before they get deported and put back on that plane, I think they should have a say.
They do want felons to vote. That's the sad part about it, right? That really is the saddest part of the whole thing, for sure. But the president signed that yesterday, and I think it's brilliant, number one. Obviously, it may take some action by Congress to put any teeth into it. Maybe we get Denny Hoskins, our Secretary of State, on tomorrow and ask him exactly what that means to him, if it changes anything. You know, for employers, before they hire someone in the United States, they're supposed to go through something called E-Verify, which would verify the person you're hiring is an American citizen. Or not here illegally would be the way of another way of putting that. Why is that not applied to voter registration? These whole motor voter laws where as soon as you get a driver's license, you're automatically signed up to vote. Those are the sorts of things that lead to fraud, and it leads to problems. And if all people have to do is check a box or not check a box as to whether or not they're a U.S. citizen, that's easy enough to lie about. So hopefully we can address some of those issues. All right, we're going to get to James Robbins coming up here in just a few minutes. First, though, I want to get to our shortlist, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
That of all the people that could have been selected to come testify about the dangers of limiting free speech and censorship, my colleagues on the other side chose someone who believes that the First Amendment is essentially a white male fetish.
Eric Schmidt yesterday in this hearing on censorship that they held in the Senate Judiciary Committee, where the Democrats picked a real winner, a left-wing professor who basically blames all problems in America in the courts on white supremacy.
Because we in these hot-ass Texas streets, honey. Y'all know we got Governor Hot Wheels down there. Come on now.
Yeah. How about that? Aren't we proud? Aren't we proud of hometowner Jasmine Crockett there? She's the new face of the Democratic Party. She was at the Human Rights Campaign giving that speech, and you heard the laughter and applause in the background. At the Human Rights Campaign, they applauded a woman making fun of a man in a wheelchair.
Did it start at 3.9 and go down, or did it?
I thought we were at 10, and then it went down to 6, and then down to 3, then it went down to 1.7, I believe.
I wasn't sure that we could improve on having Cori Bush in the limelight all the time, but I kind of think that Jasmine Crockett might have given us an upgrade for the Democrats.
Damaging a personal vehicle does not affect Elon. If anything, it's giving him more money to fix the vehicle that you damaged.
Wow. Wow. This is a disabled woman. Her name is Abigail Gill. This is out at KAKE in Wichita, Kansas. And she had her Tesla vandalized. And she's, as you can imagine, pretty angry about it, right? She has got all sorts of problems she has to deal with on a daily basis. Go ahead and play cut number 11 for us, Carl, please.
You have put a very big crisis on me because physically I am in a wheelchair. I just hope that he definitely gets the correct punishment. I hope he pays all of the damages. It is well over $1,000, possibly over $10,000 of damage. I hope that the Wichita police continue to find him.
Yeah. How about that? They're attacking a lot of people in wheelchairs these days.
I mean, the whole thing is so ridiculous, though, what they're doing.
I read a story yesterday, and you know, some of these things on Facebook, you don't know if they're true or not, but it was connected to a news report from a TV station where a lady had decided that she could no longer own her Tesla,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, the problem is she still owed about $25,000 on the Tesla. So she took it and she traded it in on a Rivian, if you know what those are. That's an electric vehicle. That's $100,000,
oh
right? So she rolled over the $24,000 that she still owed on the Tesla onto the Rivian, not as a down payment, but in addition to whatever she paid for the other electric vehicle. Now, I don't know how many of you could afford to do something like that. If you're upside down on your car, just trade it in and pay the extra payment for an extra $25,000. This is how insane these people are mm-hmm. on the left. She couldn't stand driving a Tesla, so she had to trade it in for a loss.
I saw something on social media, a friend posted, and it was saying this is how conservatives protest. And it was showing, you know, a picture of Bud Light you know, still on the shelves, because that was one way we said we were upset about the whole Dylan Mulvaney thing is we didn't buy it. And then you see how the liberals protest, and that is burning Teslas and setting buildings on fire and doing all these crazy things. Like, it seems as though their first course of action is violence. At least second or third. It's up there.
Yeah, when we burned those Bud Light boxes out at that political fundraiser that time, they were empty, just for the record. They were empty cases that at one point had Bud Light.
You mean with the flamethrowers or whatever, where that went viral?
Yes. Yes, they were empty boxes for sure. I just want to point that out. All right, quick break here. We're going to come back, talk more about this whole Signal controversy, and we'll get James Robbins in here from the Institute of World Politics. He used to work for the State Department as well, or Secretary of Defense, I should say. We're going to be back in just a minute.
So that we're clear, one of the first things that happened when I was confirmed as CIA director was Signal was loaded onto my computer at the CIA, as it is for most CIA officers. One of the things that I was briefed on very early, Senator, was by the CIA records management folks about the use of Signal as a permissible work use.
Yeah, that is the CIA Director Ratcliffe there explaining this yesterday during the committee hearing there on the Senate, where the focus was on how dare you with Signal. Obviously, somehow an errant phone number was added to this. Ratcliffe didn't know the guy's number. Hegseth doesn't have the guy's number. It's unclear exactly how that happened, and they are investigating it to figure all of that out right now. Fortunate to have with us James Robbins right now, Dean of Academics, of course, at the IWP, and that is the, of course, the Institute of World Politics. Sorry about that. He's a former special assistant to the Office of the Secretary of Defense. Mr. Robbins, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Mark. Good morning.
Thank you for your time. I'm sure by this time you probably watched some of that hearing. I think maybe there's a second day of it today. It was a preset hearing. It was already planned to go on. It just so happened to happen the day after, coincidentally, this news broke.
Yeah, lucky them, right?
Because, yeah, no kidding.
They had to face all of this umbrage, particularly coming from the Democratic side about, you know, how dare you, and, you know, people must resign and all this other stuff. They never got that upset about the collapse of Kabul in Afghanistan, but now apparently people have to resign.
Yeah. Let's talk about Signal. I mean, you worked in the Office of the Secretary of Defense. You just heard the Director Ratcliffe say that the use of Signal is pretty commonplace among people with security clearances. Am I correct about that?
Oh, yeah, it's extremely commonly used in Washington, and particularly since COVID. I think COVID was really what set Signal off, you know, people downloading it and using it. And ever since then, because it's a fairly secure network, just in general, it's secure. People have used it a lot for communications. It's extremely common in government.
I don't think anybody, and I could be wrong, will defend the fact that a journalist ended up on this string. But if you hear some on the left describe it, it's like the greatest failure of national security in our history.
Yes. I mean, it's such an exaggeration. But what we saw, if you look at the conversation, and I saw this morning that they've released the whole thing, this is the Principals Committee of the National Security Council engaging in deliberations regarding a strike. This wasn't the war plans, which, as the National Security Advisor said, was transmitted on the high side, that is through the, you know, highly secure networks. They were just talking about a few little issues, like regarding the timing and stuff like that. Nothing was really compromised. Of course, the attack went off fine. It was just that because of a human error, that is adding Jeffrey Goldberg to the distro list, you know, a journalist was able to surveil this conversation as it went on. But, you know, to call this like this, you know, Watergate or something, it's crazy.
I keep hearing people talking about SCIP, which I've read is Security Cooperation Information Portal. Are you familiar with that and how the government uses that either in conjunction with Signal or separately?
Not as familiar with that. That's a later development from when I was in. But I do know about things like JWICS, which is a communication system that we have. And you have to also understand that the phones that they're using are probably government-issued devices with very advanced encryption and, you know, anti-spyware and stuff like that. So it's not just like someone picked up their phone and downloaded Signal. We're talking about a very elaborate setup with controlled networks and things like that.
Yeah, you know, Kim and I pointed this out yesterday that we had an example here with Anheuser-Busch InBev in St. Louis when the whole Dylan Mulvaney thing happened. They needed a good crisis management team, and they could have avoided a lot of the fallout from that. And I said yesterday that Pete Hegseth denying that it ever happened was probably not the best reaction. Kim said he should have just said, yeah, that happened. We're looking into it. I mean, that would have been a much better answer than saying, this guy's a liar, and that never happened.
You know, they ambushed him coming right off a plane. I don't think he had all the facts or knew everything that was going on with this breaking story. The fact is that the more you look into this, the less important it seems. And again, this was just the National Security Council doing its job of deliberating, trying to come up with the best advice for the president. There was nothing particularly, classified or too exciting about what they were talking about. It was merely the timing of the attack. And in the end, the president made the decision. It went forward and was successful. So people really shouldn't be upset about this.
No, I think it's good to get your perspective on it because, I mean, none of us know about Signal past what we've been able to read on the internet the last 24 hours. So it's probably the first time a lot of people ever even heard the word. James Robbins, thank you for your time. Where can people find more about IWP?
Come to our website, iwp.edu. We're a graduate school of national security in Washington. We have PhDs and master's degrees, and most of our students go into government.
Outstanding. Mr. Robbins, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, have a great day. We appreciate that. So trying to keep you up to date on what's going on with all of that there in D.C. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that hearing they had yesterday on censorship. When we get back here in just a couple of minutes, it was unbelievable. We'll be right back.
Completely clear on the calls. I don't know if it was an orchestrated call in or not. It certainly was powerful, though, because, you know, if you're sitting with a foreign business person and you hear the vice president's voice, that's prize enough. I mean, that's pretty impactful stuff for anyone.
Remember that guy? That was Devin Archer, whose whistleblowing should have sunk the Biden administration. He was one of the business partners with Hunter, along with Tony Bobulinski, who came forward and testified in whistleblower testimony that, yes, Bobulinski was right. He was absolutely telling the truth way back in 2020 when he said, I was there. I know what happened. The then vice president of the United States was using his influence with Hunter Biden's business associates to help his son secure government contracts. And then we know through banking records and James Comer that millions of dollars flowed to Biden family members, including apparently his brother and his children and brothers and sisters. And it was just crazy, right? It was raining money. And the Democrats hated Devin Archer. And of course, in 2018, oddly enough, he got convicted he got convicted of defrauding a Native American tribe in a scheme that involved the issuance and sale of tribal bonds. So he got sentenced to just over a year in prison, had his conviction overturned, then later reinstated in 2020. And he had his last appeal rejected, leaving him with a prison sentence hanging over his head. President Trump yesterday pardoned him. He pardoned Devin Archer.
Nice. I'll be honest, I didn't know you could have your conviction overturned and then reinstated. Obviously, you can't be tried for the same crime because that's double jeopardy. But how can you have it overturned and then reinstated? A lower court
overturned it, and then it got appealed to a higher court where it was reinstated. So, I don't know. The Supreme Court rejected his appeal to try to get it overturned again
last year. And Hunter Biden had nothing to do with this particular thing. This was after he had already been involved with Hunter Biden's business and making money from Russia and Ukraine and all that. So the president yesterday said, let it be known on this day, I, Donald J. Trump, President of the United States, pursuant to my powers under Article 2, have granted unto the individual named below a full and unconditional pardon. And that would be a Devin Archer. And you just got to say, no doubt, because the guy had the intestinal fortitude to come forward and tell the truth, just like Tony Bobulinski, about who the big guy was. It's 10% for the big guy. I mean, all of these stories you knew to be true. And it was a bombshell when it came out. And, of course, the mainstream media tried to downplay it. But it was so important for people to hear what the guy had to say. Tucker interviewed him.
So we've got a complex business that intersects with government. We need a guy who knows it.
Right.
How do I, deal with getting a guy a visa that needs to come over for a business deal? Right. Call our lobbyist that knows the guy in DHS or used to work in DHS or, in Customs and Border Patrol or the people at the embassy in state. They might be able to help. So there are very tactical elements that are regulatory and compliance and governance that you have to go through. And you got to know the guy that
right.
worked at the old agency that now has a lobbying firm that can go back to the agency and, get things put to the front of the line.
Or maybe your dad is the vice president of the United States and he knows all those people.
You think anything more will ever happen with the Biden family?
I don't know. I mean, he pardoned a lot of people, didn't he?
He didn't pardon
himself.
He did. Now I don't know what other state charges they would face when it comes to the overseas dealings that they had that were super sketchy, but they still could technically face state charges if they figured out a way to do that. And then if they did have him testify, was it that they couldn't plead the fifth? What was it with this pardon? Because I remember hearing about this as it related to Anthony Fauci.
That they could still be brought forward to testify, and mm-hmm. because they had been pardoned, they would have no reason to plead the fifth to protect themselves because they couldn't be charged in the case.
Yeah.
But if they refused to testify, they could be thrown in prison for contempt of court.
See, I'm really hoping that's what happens to Anthony Fauci.
A unique situation.
Mm-hmm.
If you refuse to answer this question, because you can't plead the fifth, mm-hmm. you're under oath. If you don't answer the question, you're going to jail.
You know how much information would get brought to life if Hunter Biden had to do that, if Joe Biden had to do that, if he could remember, or if Anthony Fauci had to? They talk about unsealing all these documents and the JFK and all these things, and it's been a whole lot of nothing. Now, you talk about what would be something like must-see television. One of those court hearings.
Well, the Crossfire Hurricane thing yesterday was big, too. I think the Devin Archer EO was signed at about the same time, or order of clemency, I should say. Play cut number one, Carl. I don't think we've played that in its entirety yet.
Next, sir, we have a presidential memorandum for your attention. This memorandum requires the immediate declassification of all FBI files relating to the Crossfire Hurricane investigation. This was obviously one of the instances of the weaponization of law enforcement powers of prosecution against you and others. We believe that it's long past time for the American people to have a full and complete understanding of what exactly is in those files.
Which gives the media the right to go in and check it. You probably won't bother because you're not going to like what you see. This was total weaponization. It's a disgrace. It should never happen in this country. But now you'll be able to see for yourselves, all declassified.
Yeah. If I'm Andy McCabe or Peter Strzok or some other the other schmucks who were in the upper levels of the FBI at that point, I'm probably a little nervous. They were probably of the belief that none of this would ever come out.
So what was this about again? Was this something with Donald Trump and any sort of ties they tried to make between him and Russia?
And Russia,
is that what it was?
Operation Crossfire Hurricane. They launched it before, I believe, before he ever got elected. I believe it was launched in the summer before his election. And part of this was probably what Peter Strzok was talking about. We have an insurance policy to make sure that doesn't happen. Remember, his lover, Lisa Page, texted him and said, we can never let that man be president because he's going to expose the deep state would be the number one reason she wouldn't want him. Now she's testified that the DOJ ordered them at the CIA not to charge Hillary Clinton. I mean, it's just a, this is why they couldn't have Donald Trump as president, because they didn't intend for any of that to ever come out. And now finally we're getting a little bit of daylight on all of this. All right, coming up, we may hear from Chad Pergram from Fox. We've got a phone call out to him to see if he would check in with us this morning. He's been covering day two now of that hearing we talked about yesterday up in D.C. where they had John Ratcliffe and Tulsi Gabbard and others testifying. There's a day two of that coming up today. Also, I received an interesting phone call from the Post-Dispatch yesterday, and we're going to talk about that when we come back in just a minute. So, Carl, what did you say? He's 78?
78 years old today. Retired from singing.
From Aerosmith. And sang the national anthem for us earlier. That was from, what, 20 years ago?
Yeah, it was from 2001 at the Indy 500.
That was kind of rough.
We might do really Diana was. Ross tomorrow.
That was kind of rough. Do if Diana Sue had Ross. Been here, she would have gone,
Sue's back tomorrow.
Yeah, Sue will be back with us tomorrow, back from her brief staycation, I believe. That's good. Hey, shout out to Dennis Hancock. I know he's running for county executive. But he is also a county councilman, along with Mark Harder and Mike Archer. And they're the three Republicans on that council who stood up to the nonsense last night when Sam Page tried to present a proclamation honoring Planned Parenthood for, tens of thousands of murders in the last few years. I can't imagine how it read. I'm sure it was for honoring their service to women in the area.
Women's health care, right?
Yeah, women's health care. Which includes destroying your child in your stomach. But the council got up and blocked his ability to do that. Lisa Clancy, not surprisingly, and Paige and a couple of others tried to do it after the meeting, apparently, instead of during the meeting, because Hancock and Archer and Harder said, no, we're not doing this as official county business. It has no place in county business whatsoever. I'm looking up at the screen here just a minute ago, and that hearing in D.C. is getting ready to get underway again. That could be why we were unable to get to our friend Chad Pergram. We were hoping he might be able to call in here and give us an update on if they're expecting any more fireworks at this hearing today. Tulsi Gabbard and John Ratcliffe and others will be back up there. I guess maybe Mike Waltz, the National Security Advisor, discussing world threats. Now, this is a hearing that had been set up for weeks, and coincidentally, the story about the signal leak broke the night before. Now, nothing happens coincidentally in Washington, D.C. The Democrats were 100% staffed up and prepared to chew out everybody who was there yesterday when this happened. So we know that's how the game works in Washington, D.C. The Republicans probably would have done the same thing, but I do believe that whatever the leak was, they're going to find out who added that number to the text.
I'm sure. It's just really weird that he wasn't even a contact for any of them. So how did his number get included in that chat? I've accidentally included people in a chat, but I mean, you have to either check names you want in there or type it in.
I was trying to remember I was trying to remember the name of the system that Eric Greitens' administration was using when he was governor. He got in trouble for it. It was called Confide. And this was, I downloaded it just to see how it worked. Had another friend do the same thing, and we exchanged a couple of messages just to see. And you literally get the message over, and it's like Mission Impossible. 5 seconds later, it just disappears from the screen. It just pop.
Snapchat
just,
of messaging.
It's just gone. Hmm. And, of course, they got in trouble at the time, but an appeals court judge ended up ruling on their side that there was nothing wrong with them, that it was not sidestepping the Sunshine Law. I think they quit using it after that, but this is Signal's a little different. You've used it, right?
I've used Signal. It's funny because I was trying to think of how, I'm like, why does that sound so familiar? I have it on my phone. I've used it with a group of friends, and it wasn't like we were discussing crazy confidential plans, but we had it and would message on it. I haven't used it in quite some time. And it's funny because Signal put out a big message saying, you know, there's a lot of eyeballs right now in our app and new people who were talking about this and, you know, look, we're secure. And basically, this isn't our fault. understandably trying to defend what happened. It's not their fault.
As long as you don't put in the wrong phone number, right? What if
you're off by a digit? Well, but that's with anything, right? I mean, what could they have done?
User error.
It's not. Yeah, that's what I mean. It's operator error. What could Signal have done to make it where that didn't happen?
And you'd have to have already be signed into Signal to use it, correct? Like,
yeah.
So this journalist must have already been a member of Signal
in order
for his number to
get
added.
It's not, I mean, if imagine if Signal made it where every time you tried to add someone to a group chat, you know, you had to answer the question, are you sure you want this number included? Yeah. You know how annoying that would be for all the people who use it on a regular basis?
Or they have that and they just turned it off.
Yeah.
So I've been getting a lot of feedback and questions about the voter guide. I'm planning to try to get one of these up posted to the website before the end of the week. And yesterday I got a text message from the education reporter at the Post wanting to know if I had endorsed anyone in the school board elections this year, because last year they took great glee at the Post in doing a look back to see, you know, how many of my people had won, as if that is any indication of success or not, or some reflection on me that I picked losers. That's not what the voter guide is about. The voter guide is about me telling you my opinion on the right person for this job, or the wrong, as opposed to the wrong person. If they're not endorsed, they would be the wrong person, or where I stand on a certain issue, and then you vote however you want. I mean, that's kind of what I've done. Now, obviously in St. Louis County, which is purple these days, getting any candidate that is the least bit conservative or is fighting for families is really hard, because the left dominates a lot of these elections, particularly in an April election when there's not great turnout.
Because you're also choosing people, these candidates who are not backed by the NEA, which we all know that any candidate who's supported by the union is going to have all that money backing them too. Makes it a little bit easier.
Lots of yard signs and all that stuff. Yeah, I will have that out. I might list a few of the local mayor's races too, where I'm at least the ones I'm familiar with. I just can't get to all of them, but I will try to get you a voter guide out here before the end of the week, because early voting started yesterday, and early in-person voting, which is no excuse absentee voting. And by next week, there'll be satellite locations in a lot of local areas where you can go and cast your vote early. Let's try to turn it out this year. Turn out the vote. Don't let it be like last April, where we had places in St. Charles County with 13, 14, 15% turnout. It ought to be a minimum of 30 or 40% turnout. It's such high stakes here, seriously. Our children's lives are at stake here. Their education is at stake here. All right, let's get to the Brian Kilmeade Show coming up here right after the news at the top of the hour. We'll show the latest on this hearing going on in D.C. today. Then Annie Fry and Mark Reardon after that. Kim and Carl and Sue. And I will see you tomorrow morning starting at 5 a.m.
Get more at 971talk.com.